Yeah, liquor stores are very, very easy to find in every single city, and a lot easier to find than somebody that does any of the other extracurriculars that I would partake in on top of all of the drinking. We were all young dudes, and we had nothing better to do than cash our checks and drink at the hotels every single day. So I was definitely making a lot of money and not saving anything. And it was going good for a long time until it went really bad. We were on a job. I got a call from the contractor that my brother had ran out of money and I either worked for him or get off of his job site. So that was a pretty weird spot in life. I ended up very broke, very homeless. I was living out of a vehicle for quite some time, sleeping in my friend's garages or whatever couch I was allowed to stay on, you know, trying not to overstay my welcome anywhere. And it was really easy to get into that alcoholic despair of just like continuously drinking and being like, well, you know, it's not going to get any better. And just, you know, hitting that cycle and blaming everybody else for my problems rather than, you know, making any type of attempt of fixing myself or taking any steps in the proper direction for myself. I found myself out west in Arizona during this, and I borrowed, I think it was like $400 at the time, and I drove back to Michigan and stayed with my parents and slept on their couch for a while. My now brother-in-law coincidentally had moved back from California the day prior to me driving across country. He and I grew up as best friends. He's actually married to my sister now. They were in a little tiff. And he was like, hey, come out to the bar with me, I'll pay. And I was like, okay, because I ain't got any money. That was actually by a complete chance meeting was the night that I met my wife. That was like the first glimpse of me attempting to turn my life around. I put on a really, really good facade for many, many years to convince that woman that I had my shit under control when I was really just a spiraling alcoholic the whole time. I mean, I was no longer, I worked enough to not be homeless. You know, we funded a marriage, we had children, bought a home, had reliable vehicles. So on the surface, I had rebounded, but I was still drinking to hide all of my problems. I was drinking on the way home from work consistently 6 to 7 nights a week, taking the scenic route or the long route home and, you know, getting as many tall boys down as I could before I went into the house, not knowing what was going on or what was wrong with me. I kind of like would blame my wife for the way that I felt, or blame my job for the way that I felt, or my colicky baby for the way that I felt. Any excuse other than like, hey, maybe you're an alcoholic and need to get some help for yourself. There was still, though, it was a, you know, on paper it was a very successful time. I built a franchisee of a pizzeria from 1 store to 7 stores in that time. Very much a workhorse. Again, on the surface, people didn't really know that I had an issue. I knew I had an issue. I thought I beat alcoholism because I admitted to myself I was an alcoholic, like when I was like 19. So I was like, oh, I'm definitely smarter than alcoholism if I already admitted and know it. There was a point where I started isolating myself and drinking quite a bit, and I would be in my garage drinking every single night rather than coming home and making any type of attempt to be present with my family. Or I would make the excuse of like, oh, well, I can't come home because I don't want to disrupt bedtime. So then I would stay out and drink more and then come home and drink in the garage. You could make up a million excuses, and I've probably convinced myself of them at least once. And I got into this really, really dark place. I mean, I had convinced myself so many absurd things. My wife went out to a work party. I convinced myself my second child wasn't mine. If you looked at this child, you'd be like, dude, like, I don't even know if your wife's genetics are in there. Are you sure he's hers? But like, that's like the craziness of just being isolated to yourself and like relying on your own sickness to make decisions for you. And so, yeah, and so I got really, really dark. My first bottom, I would say, is I stepped out and had an affair on my wife. And that was like a line that I didn't think I would ever cross. I thought I had morals. And it was just something I didn't know that I could do or that I would do. And then once I did it, I was so consumed by fear that it was like, okay, my wife's going to find out, so I'm scared. My job's going to find out, this woman's from my job, so my job's going to collapse, you know. So, like, then I started, like, trying to balance all of it out of just, like, this fear machine. And it collapsed on me, obviously. You can only keep that stuff up for so long. I was kicked out. I quit drinking that day on my own. It was, like, my first attempt at sobriety. And I lasted about 8 months. And of that 8 months, I was on the couch probably all 8 months. I wasn't very productive at all. I didn't try and change anything other than the fact that I, you know, was just keeping alcohol out of my house. I can't even tell you what I did the day that I relapsed or why. I just know that I pulled up to a liquor store and grabbed a 12-pack and, you know, was drinking it before I was even in my driveway. And I tried doing the control test of, like, oh, well, I only drink on Fridays now. Oh, well, I only drink on Fridays and Saturdays now. Oh, well, Sundays I do yard work, but I start yard work at 11, so I can start drinking at 11. So quickly, it was like then, you know, you got gut rot on Monday, and you can't wait to get a drink in you, and you know, and then it just goes and goes and goes. Before I knew it, I was just fully back into complete full-blown alcoholism. Again, drinking, you know, in my vehicles while I'm driving or while I'm driving home. I kind of really wanted to make myself feel different at that point. I had always been chasing making myself feel different, but at that point, after I relapsed, I was really running from, like, who I had become because I had crossed that moral line that I felt like I was never able to cross, or I felt like I was a better person. So then I, you know, then I started seeking out alternatives, not alternatives, complements to alcohol, side dishes, I guess, and would do that as often as I possibly could. First time, like I said, driving around is hiding alcohol when you're driving around. But then I started hiding it in places at my house so that it could look like I was just drinking light beer. And I think my wife, kind of a last-ditch effort, moved us down here. You know, one of those relocation things to try and become sober. I kind of got my stuff together a little bit again on the surface. Made it look like everything was going really good. I got a good job. You know, had the income that I wanted coming in. All of those good surface level things. But I was drinking at an accelerated rate, even more so than I ever had before. I mean, I was so good at drinking and being manipulative. I worked for a franchise that had 110 stores. I convinced this guy to close his stores early based on COVID staffing. But it was because everything down here closes earlier and I needed to get to the store to get alcohol. So, I mean, imagine how good you have to be to manipulate a guy that rich and powerful. And yeah, and it was absolutely so that I could get these stores closed so that I could get my alcohol and drink, because I didn't plan ahead very well. So I didn't have, like, stashes. I had to go get more alcohol every day because I was drinking until there was nothing left, or until, you know, I passed out. The last day that I drank, my wife and I have probably the only good boundary we ever had was that we don't go through each other's phones. The last day I drank, I just happened to kind of tap and see a preview, and she is very good friends with my sister and my best friend's sister, and they have a group chat, and in the group chat, it was my best friend's sister and my sister telling my wife to leave me if I wasn't going to get any better. That hit pretty deep when you see your best friend's sister and your sister agreeing, like, hey, he's not getting his shit together. Personally, I think that was the first experience in my life I ever had with God or a higher power, because any other day I would have went and isolated and drank, and I wouldn't even have brought it up. I would have just buried it and used it as fuel to drink myself to oblivion. And I chose to address it And then when she left the room, I poured out all of my alcohol. I didn't want her to think that it was like some, you know, look at me, I'm pouring my booze out. And that was the first night I ever talked to anything that I remotely felt was a god. And man, were those some fearful prayers. I think for a good 10 minutes of those, it was just going, God, 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 over and over again and not actually saying anything. And so I didn't, like, go into AA. I didn't get into, like, I didn't enter myself into rehab or anything. I tried doing it again on my own. About 2 weeks in, I started feeling myself getting cocky again, like I knew that I had beat alcoholism. And again, I think God intervened, and that was the day that I chose to walk into an AA room for the first time. From there, I don't work a perfect program. It took me a long time to be okay with the program that I work, because I was so jealous of the people that are like, I did 180 and 90, or I did 90 and 90, 500 days, and I haven't missed one. And I used to just feel like I wasn't like a good enough sober person because I wasn't achieving that level of sobriety. Over time, I've gotten to be very, very comfortable with what my program brings me. What it brought me was a lot of fear and anxiety at the beginning, a lot. I didn't know how to manage a single emotion when I first got sober, not a single emotion. I had been absolutely using something or other to hide that since I had been 11 years old, basically. So that was a big whirlwind of finding out really, it was like living for the first time, but feeling all of those emotions was not fun to feel. I was an anxious mess, absolutely, for so long. I was incredibly blessed to have health insurance so that I could get into therapy. If that's an option for people, I'm a huge advocate of it. AA and therapy have definitely changed my life completely. I'm a silent AA guy. This is actually probably the most I've talked in my entire sobriety in AA rooms. So, like, I didn't get a sponsor right away. Some guy told me he was my sponsor when I walked into my first room, and then as I was leaving, he was like, hey, I'm your sponsor now. And I was like, oh, okay. And I called him like once, and then I didn't call him again. And then I heard a guy share a story, I don't know, a week or two later, and his story resonated with me, and he was my sponsor for a little while. We didn't really make it very far. We didn't have matching schedules, and it was very hard for us to meet up. And then I white-knuckled my sobriety for about 8 or 9 months. I was still going to AA meetings, but I did not have a sponsor. And then I got stuck in my head in this really weird spot of like, how do you walk up to another man and ask them to be your sponsor and be your friend when like it was easy, I guess, at the beginning, but then like when you're into sobriety, it adds like a different layer of fear, I guess. And I went to so many of these Saturday morning meetings out at the Serenity House, and I would like pump myself up driving there, like, you're going to ask somebody to be your sponsor today. You're going to ask somebody to be your sponsor today. And then I wouldn't. And then Frank, my sponsor, I walked outside to smoke a cigarette, and he was like, hey, I'm Frank. And we started talking a little bit, and I don't even know what he was talking to me about, because in my head I was like, you ask this man to be your sponsor right now. So I basically cut him off in the middle of him talking, and I was like, please be my sponsor. And he was like, oh, okay, man, okay. So that was a while ago. That was like well over a year ago now. And I had him take me back through it like it was like I had never read the big book or anything, and I started it all over again. And it was the first time any of it like actually made sense. The God stuff to me was really hard for me to jump on board with. When I first started praying, I was like, am I even praying to anything right now? Like, am I just talking to the floor? It was really weird, you know, but then I kept doing it, and then it felt like I was praying to something. And then I got to a point where I was comfortable that I had found a higher power. And I don't know what my higher power's name is. But I know that when I talk to my higher power, it does listen and it's there for me. And I'm not the best at keeping tabs of myself and praying as much as I would like to pray. But I'm at a point in my sobriety and my spirituality that I know what I need to do when I don't know what to do. And what I need to do when I don't know what to do is talk to my higher power. And that's what sobriety has really taught me. I used to get wrapped up in my head and be an anxious mess. Frank can attest to that. And I would be fearful of anything and everything. And now I've reached this place of, I mean, I guess of serenity, to be quite honest, of like understanding what I'm in control of and what I'm not in control of, and turning anything and everything over to my higher power has brought me such a level of peace in my life. Speaking in front of you guys, I would have been obsessing about this for weeks in my previous life, and I would have buckled up here. And to not have anxiety coming into this, like knowing that it might help somebody, but it's helping me, and that's like what I need to keep doing, is helping me. And that's what AA continually does, is help me. Because if I can be the best version of myself, then I can be the best version of myself, hopefully for somebody else or for everybody else. You know, whether that's my wife, whether that's my three kids, whether that's somebody in these programs. But this thing has absolutely changed the entire outcome of my life. I'm not scared anymore. And that is such a crazy thing to be aware of, is being able to just be okay with life on life's terms, and knowing that I have something to fall back on that's not me, or that there is a higher power, that I have a sponsor that I can trust, you know, that I have meetings that I can go to. And like I said, I don't talk a lot at the meetings that I go to, but there are people in the meetings that I go to that I want to hear from every single time that I go. And that's, you know, why I keep going to those meetings. And those people are just as big a part of my program as anything is. Yeah, if it wasn't for this, I don't know. I would have spiraled. If I would have continued drinking the night that I quit and obsessed on whether or not my wife was going to leave me, I would have spiraled, absolutely purposely destroyed my marriage, which would have impacted my children, all of those things, self-sabotage to the fullest. And now all of that's still up in the air. It could still, you know, my marriage isn't, there's no gold rope around it that says that it's going to survive. I'm doing this now. That might have got me in these rooms, but I'm doing it now for me, regardless of the outcome of my marriage. Or, I mean, I got laid off 2 weeks ago, and my first thought was that I should go to a meeting rather than I should go get some alcohol. That's not the power of the program, then I don't really know what else could be. So those, like I said earlier, I used to feel like my sobriety wasn't good enough, or that my program wasn't good enough. But if my program is having my thoughts default to that type of habit, then that is a program that's saving my life. Because otherwise, I don't make good decisions. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I don't make good decisions. And that's it. And I got invited here, and this is like my first time sharing. This is honestly probably my first like legit official service work too. So this is all good things. You're witnessing it as it happens. So thank you guys.
Thank you so much. That was great.
First I slip, and then I quit. To a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look in Thank you. sometimes quickly, sometimes slow. We get just what we need on a broad highway. God won't try. We walk eternally. Look into the window for a heart that beats for me. Take me where the promises are where the promises are.